Friends, welcome back to 42 Fish. This is your cousin Odd, broadcasting live from high but not too high above the bowling alley in downtown Powell River. My studio is filled with fabulous guests, one who's even been here before. I would like to introduce you to the BC Yukon representative for the Council of Canadians, Lila Darwish. Hello, Lila.
Hello. Always great to be back.
Oh, I'm so happy that you're here. And today you are traveling with a companion, Dr. Owen Finn. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask each of you to say your name and just speak a little into the mic so I can make sure I have your levels well.
Hi, how is everybody in Powell River?
Hey, nice job.
Hello. I don't know how to top that.
Perfect. You're perfect as you are. All right. Now, Lila and Owen, you were in town this weekend for a community forum on LNG, liquefied natural gas. This was put on by concerned community members and supported by the Sierra Club, the Powell River Voices, Dogwood Initiative, Council of Canadians, and the Malaspina Environmental Organization. Let's call them that. It happened yesterday. About 75 people turned up. Were you surprised? And does that match some of the numbers that you've seen at other presentations you've given?
I've always been surprised, particularly on the Sunshine Coast, about how many people are showing up to listen to various people, including me. I'm always flattered by the attention this gets, but given the focus of the BC provincial government on LNG and their amount of money they're spending on it, I'm not surprised that taxpayers are getting excited as to when or if ever they will see any return for the investment the government's putting in to the LNG industry to develop what is ultimately the public's resource, natural gas.
And I would say we've been doing, with the Council of Canadians, we've been doing several different LNG summits and forums, and each one that I've gone to, there's always anywhere from 75 to 300, 400 people.
Oh.
And so I think there's, 300, 400 people in Vancouver. You know, there's been some in Squamish, in Delta. Folks up north in northwestern BC have been putting on different forums and community meetings, because I think right now we have a government that is pushing a huge message saying LNG is safe, LNG is green, it's clean, it's what this province needs for the future. And I think a lot of people on the ground are starting to notice that that's actually not shaking out and that they're getting misinformation. And so it's really good to be able to come in and share, you know, what are some of the facts that our government is not sharing with us so that people can make an informed decision and also hold their government accountable when they're pushing us in a direction that we should not be going.
Lila, you and I spoke the last time that you were here about how overwhelming it can be, how many different fronts we're being attacked on. And one of the things I think about this LNG issue is that this is another time that business or government is separating into little different names to try and keep it away. So LNG, we're being sold LNG here, but not realizing that if you go with LNG here in Powell River, you are supporting fracking in northeastern BC. So I could you speak a little bit more about the spin that's being put on and how the public is being overwhelmed by bits of information?
Absolutely. So first of all, the fact that we call it liquefied natural gas, when in BC, the bulk of that gas is coming from fracking operations in the northeastern part of the province. And we're using that, you know, we're talking like the Peace River region, Fort St. John, Fort Nelson, that's becoming a sacrifice zone in this province in terms of what's happening to the water up there, what's happening to the land, the air quality, and the impacts it's also going to have on the climate and people's health and well-being. And this government keeps saying to us that fracking is clean and it's green. And you go all over the world and people are rising up against fracking. Governments are saying no to it, yet our province wants to go 110% in that way. And I think, you know, you go about 5 years back and maybe not everybody knew about fracking. And if they did here on the coast, they were content to let that be kind of the sacrifice zone of the Northeast. But what we're starting to see is that when you don't deal with a major industry that's kind of going out of control, it starts to spread. I'm from Alberta originally, and we know that with the tar sands. What started off as like a problem in Fort McMurray becomes tar sands pipelines that are snaking its way to the northwest and the south coast, right? And that's what a lot of people are fighting. A lot of people don't want pipelines, right? So with BC, you start with the fracking, and then you have to move this frack gas through pipelines to the coast, whether it's up in Prince Rupert or Kitimat, or down here near Delta, you know, Port Alberni, Campbell River, Squamish. They want to build these massive LNG plants with LNG tankers. And these are super tankers that can be as big as 3 football fields long. And there, they're going to be basically cooling the gas to minus 163 degrees, and then they want to ship it. And there's a whole host of impacts, which, again, the government does not want to talk about. They just want to say about how this is going to fuel our economy. And there's a lot of myths about, are we getting those jobs? Likely not. Is this a good economic business case? Absolutely not. And then again, this is not a green industry when it comes to the climate, when it comes to water, when it comes to the pipelines. It does not serve us.
Lila, I'd like to speak to the elderly Caucasian gentleman in a suit now.
I think that would be a good idea.
Like to, because Lila, you're sounding a little fanatic to me.
I always
and
do.
I know that the Council of Canadians are on the terrorist watch list. So I'd like to speak to this Caucasian gentleman in a suit. Sir.
Thank you.
I tell you that there's jobs out there, right? And there's money. What is it that people are saying to you? Like, you're full of it. You know, what is the prose that they're saying?
First of all, I come at it from 25 years in the business, of business, and the jobs that have been promised by the Premier only last year were somewhere close to 100,000 jobs in a debt-free BC, and that BCers would have first dibs on, be first in the lineup in those jobs. I think I'm pretty well quoting her verbatim. Since that time, as is usually no surprise to BCers who are used to the boom and bust cycles of resource-based industries, the LNG price in Asia has tanked and is likely to stay that way. The Premier recently got a dressing down from the CEO of Petronas, who has a big proposal in Kitimat, and Prince Rupert, sorry, and who's saying that the opportunity for BC for LNG has basically passed. The window's gone. The U.S. will beat us to it, or Australia, or Qatar, or some of the other places that export to the Asia, and that the price has come down from when she was talking about 100,000 jobs. It was $18.50, roughly, per million BTUs, is how they sell it. It has since come down to somewhere around 11, and we in BC cannot afford to build these and create jobs and sell it and make any money at all for the return on what is ultimately a public resource, natural gas. So apart from any climate change implications or the disruption to the environment, there is not a business case to be made for this anymore. And the government, the Auditor General just reported that the government has poured about $2.5 billion of public money into promoting this industry and so far has absolutely zero to show for its money for its as a return, and is projecting now that... the industry is projecting that it will be 10 to 15 years before there's a single penny poured back into the BC coffers to pay for the investment. So this doesn't look like a good business investment. Whether or not you're an environmental activist, you have to look at it as business people and say, no, this better spend elsewhere in promoting a more sustainable economy and a more diverse economy, which is not subject to the boom and bust cycle that BC is so familiar with.
Could you tell me then, you know, a lot of times I feel, oh my God, we're doomed no matter what. However, if we know that we don't know the answer, the answer to our climate change problem does not exist right now as we know it. Yeah. Somebody's got to create that out of thin air, which is going to be somebody innovative, imaginative, maybe in the sciences, maybe in the arts, maybe in politics, who knows, right? What if we took the however many billion dollars that we've spent in LNG or promoting a project that isn't going to go forward or can't really go forward, what if we took that money and put it into think tanks or education or creative retreats? Do you think that we, as a businessman, would you say that would be a wise investment to spend money on creating something that isn't here already?
very much so. The green tech industry employs far more people, or would employ far more people, than oil and gas ever would. And we need to spend some time in exploring and expanding the green tech industry. It's already here. We just need to give it somewhat the same loving care and attention that, that has been lavished on the oil and gas industry. That attention needs to be done. It's happening. But the government is ignoring it because they see a big payback on oil and gas. And the other thing I think I'd like to point out is that oil and gas companies are not silly, and they all have strategies that talk about, well, when either we run out of our resource or the public's patience with the climate damage that we're doing runs out, they all have strategic plans that say we really have to diversify what we're up to. And they're there. I've seen them, Shell. I've read the Shell one and British Petroleum. And they all have plans that says, okay, if they make us leave 80% of our stuff in the ground, what do we do then? And they do have plans. And those plans include green tech. But they do need the public, particularly their investors, to say enough's enough. I want to see those plans and I want to see them implemented pretty soon. So we don't have to invent a whole pile of new industries to be in the energy business. They're already there, but they merely need a good, for want of a better word, kick in the pants to get on with.
Lila, could you talk to me a little bit in terms of activism and what you're seeing on the ground? Yesterday you spoke about the Unistaten action camp. You talked about people on the front lines, a lot of indigenous people seemingly on the front lines. Probably not a surprise there. As activists, how do we, in this community in particular, we see a lot of people, talking about LNG and talking about the jobs. And in particular, one of the things I'm noticing is that there's a lot of promotion in our community to like move here, it's cheap, get a job and travel over to Fort McMurray. Or, you know, we're going to have the LNG terminal here and you could get a job right here. And so even though it might not financially make sense and like, okay, we shouldn't go ahead with it, we're also used to governments going ahead with stuff that is really not worthwhile. What do we do in this community to let people know that LNG equals fracking and that you're being sold a bill of goods? You don't have to go work in the mines.
So many things. I'm trying to think where to begin on that. I think, first of all, it shouldn't be in a lot of the communities in BC. And I'm from Alberta originally, so I know a little bit about boom and bust and how people are sold a lot just on the promise of jobs. I think communities shouldn't have to make a choice between, you know, having to leave their community for work or having to take the job that's going to actually hurt their health and impact the resources and the ability for their children and their grandchildren to live. And I think, you know, you go up to Northwestern BC where they're fighting LNG and pipelines right now. And a lot in the beginning, you know, we've always had some communities and some really amazing frontline, I guess, land defenders have said no to fracking and no to LNG from the get-go because they're living on the land. They know that if this pipeline or this mega project goes through, it's going to destroy their ability to live in terms of their salmon and kind of, you know, their traditional ways. And you have in that department, you have the Unistaten who've been having a blockade for 5 years against the Enbridge pipeline, against the Pacific Trail's fracked gas pipeline and a few others. But in Northwestern BC, you had several folks, you know, in the communities of Hazelton, the Kispiox Valley, Smithers, who weren't coming out necessarily against LNG because they don't want to be against everything, right? You know, they can't, you know, they're saying no to the pipelines already in terms of Enbridge. They don't want to come across as saying no to everything and they need jobs, you know? And so they were trying to be really neutral about this until they found out that some of these LNG projects were going to be positioned right at the mouth of the Skeena River, which is a mighty, mighty river that is actually home to the second largest salmon run in BC, in Canada, actually. And if these LNG terminals are put at the mouth of the Skeena, it has a huge potential to collapse that run. And that run of salmon, that is their wild salmon economy. It's been the sustenance for the people in that area for a long time, First Nations and, you know, rural folks alike. And that made a lot of people say, actually, we can say no to this. Because if we have to choose between LNG jobs and salmon, and if we take care of our salmon, they can feed us for, you know, 10, 15, 20, 100 years. Why would we take these jobs that are going to be a lot less? and that are only going to employ some of us. So I think it's always important to say it's a crisis, a political crisis, that our leaders will only offer us the choices of you can destroy your environment and, you know, incur certain really detrimental impacts for a job, instead of actually trying to invest in other types of jobs that would allow us to not have to make that choice and to actually leave something to for future generations that is actually worth having. So that's the first thing. And then I think secondly, all over the province, whether it's in northeastern BC or northwestern BC or down in Squamish, Vancouver, people are starting to realize that LNG is a bad idea, and they're starting to try to educate their elected officials, educate their community, because what you had happen is that the government and industry got to communities first and said it's safe, it's clean, it's green, you know, it's beautiful, why wouldn't you want it? And people need jobs, and people are concerned, and you know, you tell them that this is going to actually save them from climate change, which is a total lie, and they're willing to say yes to it. And so because the communities got that first dose of misinformation, there's a need to go in there and actually say, here's the full facts. You know, so you can make an informed decision, and then to make sure your elected officials also have that information, and then to hold them accountable to making sure that they, you know, protect the things that we value in our communities. So I think there's a bit of both, and especially our provincial government, who I would say is selling us out in more ways than one, and actually letting a lot of these LNG companies and these fracking companies dictate our regulations, dictate our laws, and right now they're making a mess of it. There's a lot of things that we've lost in terms of, you know, protections on our agricultural lands, our provincial parks, because we've been letting these fracking companies and these LNG companies say, if you want us to operate here, you need to slash those regulations. You need to give us the tax incentives and the subsidies that should be going to other things so that, you know, you have an attractive business case for us. But what that actually amounts to is selling it out for the people. So I think there's a lot of different places to maneuver there. And in terms of activism, you know, getting active in the place that you're in, number one, educating your people, and also supporting those folks on the front lines who are saying, we're not going to run these pipelines through. And if they stand strong, then these pipelines can't get through. And then these LNG projects aren't going to be a good investment and no one's going to go for it. So supporting the Unist'ot'en, supporting the Gitxan, the Mattie Lee camp, which is an amazing group of people, hereditary chiefs who are also blocking another pipeline through their territory. And supporting these folks to actually stand strong, have the financial resources and the people on the ground so that they can actually make sure that this doesn't happen.
Cousins, you are tuned to 42 Fish on CJMP. I am your cousin, Odd. You're just listening to Lila Darwish of the Council of Canadians and Dr. Owen Finn here from House Sound. We're talking about liquefied natural gas and how it affects our community here on the Salish Seas. Cousins, you heard a couple of words there that might have rung some bells. The ALR in particular, ALR Agricultural Land Reserve, changes recently. Nicholas Simons, our MLA, was booted from the legislature for calling the BC Liberals liars because over changes to the ALR. Yesterday at the meeting, we saw an interesting map, I believe Dr. Finn, you showed that, of where the ALR land has opened up compared with where, it was Lila, where the water basins are that they want to frack. And Powell Riverites might know about the ALR because recently our mayor spoke about opening up ALR land to a new international school for Chinese students here and wanting to build on that land. So could we talk a little bit about that ALR and the river basins you were speaking about?
Right. So, I mean, farmland is precious, food security is precious, and I think, you know, we want to be supporting our farmers as much as we can and also making sure that we are growing food as close to home as possible, especially given some of the climate disruptions we're seeing and the impact it's having on kind of the global food supply. In the situation with the ALR, you see certain areas that have opened up that are basically places that were protected before but now are open to any number of development activities. And it's just really interesting to look at the northeast corner of BC. There was all this protected land around Fort St. John and Fort Nelson, and that now is open. And whether that's for fracking or for the Site C Dam, these are two mega projects that basically they need that land. And then you kind of go across the province, and there's also a bunch of land that's opened up in that Smithers, Hazleton area as well. And that's where you would be seeing a lot of these pipelines going through. And so the government might say that's not the only reason, but that is a very interesting reason. And again, it goes with the theme.
Coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. And it goes to the theme of them trying to, again, pave the way, fast track, make things as easy as possible for these companies by cutting through all, you know, what the companies would call red tape, But really, those are the things that safeguard, you know, what matters to a lot of British Columbians, which is clean water, you know, access to good local food, and a good environment. And so I think we have to be really careful about who's calling the shots, and it's not our government right now. Or if it is, they're doing it for the companies.
Dr. Finn, could you talk to me? You are a scientist as well, is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
I would like to know a little bit about... I understand that there's been changes to the British Columbia education curriculum within the science area, and I'm noticing that what might seem like unconnected changes that the BC Liberal government is making might actually be linked in some way. Are you aware of any of those changes and how they might play out?
A little bit, not totally, but I know that the oil and gas companies are inventing curricula to do with natural resource development and trying to get government to include them in the curricula for high school students. That's fairly dangerous because the curricula will not be vetted and will not be a balanced representation of both the good and the bad that comes from natural resource development. So it's a dangerous precedent. It's one that has been tried in the U.S. and has been stoutly resisted there, and I think should be stoutly resisted here. I think teachers and parents should collectively decide what should be on a curriculum, not oil and gas companies.
Dr. Finn, we're sort of, sorry, cousins, it's 12:15 already. This is a really fascinating conversation, though. I feel as though maybe we should talk a little bit or maybe I'll fill listeners in about the liquefied natural gas, or maybe, you know what, cousins, just Googs it. Find out what is happening in your community around liquefied natural gas and find out what your mayor or council thinks about this. You were just visiting our mayor, I believe, to speak with Mayor Formosa. I guess...
We were.
I won't press there because we're short on time. But any last things you'd like to say?
BC has had a long history of resource development, particularly in the forest industry, which is ultimately a more sustainable, far more sustainable industry than oil and gas. Your original analogy of five eggs in a quiche is very apt here. We have a limited resource of natural gas. Shipping it to Asia would decrease it in a hurry. And Canada would, according to several projections, become a net importer within the next 5 years of natural gas, mostly in the east importing, and in BC is the only province that has a large enough resource to possibly be self-sustaining for the 100 years they talk about. Diversifying economies is a must for particularly rural communities in British Columbia. And adding to the single resource-based industry focus that a lot of towns have had is just repeating and exaggerating the boom and bust cycle that towns hate and that cause our people to have to get on the plane on a Sunday evening and go to places like Fort McMurray to make a living. That's very disruptive to communities. Communities would be better off. I look at where I'm familiar with in Squamish, where the gondola opening there has opened up a whole tourism business, will employ far more people than that proposed LNG plant ever will, and was contributing more to the economy of Squamish than that LNG plant ever will, and will pay more taxes because it's locally based, not based in Singapore or Indonesia. The property taxes, yes, is attractive to a town like Squamish, but for example, the music and wind festivals held in Squamish added more this year to the economy by a factor of at least five than the 2 million property taxes the wood fiber proposed LNG plant ever will. So there are opportunities for towns to diversify their economies, provide jobs and futures for their children. My view of the proposed jobs in the LNG business is not that my children will become what's known in Alberta as rig pigs or drill rig operators. That's not a very attractive industrial future for BC, and I think the government would be well versed in the idea that that to diversify BC's economy would be good. We had recently in Vancouver, Microsoft moving into town with 400 new jobs. The Disney movie business move into town, create a whole bunch of more new jobs. No fanfare for that. No $2.5 billion subsidy. But on we go, and it's a diversified economy that's not subject to whether the LNG price in Asia is $18 or $10. So that's my message. Diversify the economy. The government should start to use our money more wisely than to pour $2.5 billion down the drain.
Thank you, Dr. Finn. Thank you very much. Lila, last words from you?
Yeah, I have a few. I guess I would say when it comes to LNG, you keep hearing people talk about it as a bridge fuel. And I think what we should be talking about more is that it's burning a bridge. When it comes to climate change, when it comes to, what some of the struggles we're dealing with right now is, a lot of people say we need to be keeping that in the ground and we need to be investing in a different way forward. And in terms of it burning a bridge, we're taking so much energy and so much dollars and sinking them into making a larger fossil fuel industry and instead of actually putting that into the things that would get us away from that. And so I think we need to really think carefully about what we're investing in. And then I think we also have to look at the fact that most communities are concerned about this and don't have enough information, and that our governments don't have the information either. They don't understand what happens if there is an LNG tanker accident. They don't know, what some of the impacts are in terms of, fracking and water. There's a lot of questions out there, but instead of actually taking the time to get the research and plan wisely, they're just rushing forward and trying to fast track everything. And you've been hearing, a lot of calls across Canada. The Council of Canadians just did a poll recently and found out that 70% of Canadians actually want a moratorium on fracking. And I think if we were to poll people in BC around LNG, I think a lot of people would think that it's a fairly reasonable way forward to actually say, we don't know enough about this. We need to do the research. We need to actually find out what the impacts truly are before we start signing everything away. And so I think our politicians are doing us a great disservice, and we need to hold them accountable and invest in different things and also think about the environment and the security of these ventures, because I think it fails on all those fronts. So I think those would be all the things I have to say.
I would like to thank both of you so much.
You're welcome.
Hands raised to both of you for the research you've done and for the personal time that you've put into this effort. And thank you for coming to our community and sharing this information with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, my goodness. The Salish Seas, cousins. We can make change, though. Don't get scared. We can do it. We can indeed. Let's have a little think.